And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a beautiful Wednesday, April the 5th, 2017 here in Ohio, 1:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Scott Spears back with you here on the Now program. And today we have one of my favorite people on discussing one of the biggest issues in the country right now. Certainly you could not escape discussion during the last presidential election about health care, and in the last month with a vote that was supposed to be scheduled in the Congress that did not happen twice, and possibly a new plan that is on its way here in just a few days. Health care is still a topic in the country we live in and has been a topic of every presidential election dating back to before Franklin Roosevelt. One guy, one man, can give us a great opinion on that. He has not been with us since, I believe it was sometime last October. So this is a long time coming to have him back on the program. As I said, he's one of my favorite guests. He's an author. He spent many years on the Today Show, Dr. Art Uihlein. Dr. Uihlein, good to have you back.
Thank you, Scott. It is nice to be with you.
Dr. Uihlein, before we get into the nuts and bolts here of healthcare, why, for, I'm going to say, the last 100 years, has this been a major topic of discussion in politics and policy in the United States?
Well, Scott, I think it's because we're asking the wrong questions and we're thinking about health care the wrong way. You talked about the nuts and bolts of health care. And I think the real question is not what should we be doing with respect to insurance, Obamacare, ACA, but who are we as a people? I spent the last 48 hours flying to and from Boise, Idaho, for a funeral. Funeral for the mother of my daughter-in-law. And we sat in church in Boise with several hundred people, the vast majority of whom were pro-life, but only up to a point. They care about the unborn, but they do not care about the poor or the elderly. They do not care about the sick and the needy. Now, why do I say something like that? I say that because Idaho is one of the states in this country that turned down Medicaid for the poor. The government offered to pay for Medicaid for the poor. And these people elected a governor who said, we don't want your money. Let the poor take care of themselves. I found it ironic. The priest said, we live for the Lord and we die for the Lord. But that Lord said, what you do for one of the least of these, you do for me. And we seem to have forgotten this message. So I think it's, who are we as a people? Rand Paul, during the run-up debates, was asked, well, what would you do if you were in an emergency room and a motorcyclist was down in the street and dying and didn't have health insurance? And his answer was, he made that choice, so he would go without care in my emergency room. Who are we as a people? There are people who say that, who question, why should healthy people subsidize the sick? The answer is, that's what insurance is all about. I paid for life insurance and prayed I would never have to use it. The living subsidize the dead. with health insurance. I pay premiums, and I pray that I never have to use it. But I also pray that the less fortunate in our country would not stay sick and lose their lives because they could not afford insurance. Another thing happened on this trip in Boise. We use Lyft and Uber to get around, and one reason is because you just meet such wonderful people, a different driver every time. And there was a 58-year-old man who drove us back to the airport who had lost his job 6 months ago. This is a man with a college degree, a master's in science, a computer programmer, and the company he worked for left town, and he couldn't leave town because all of his family and roots are there. He now drives making less than $10 an hour when he's done with the gas and the maintenance on his car. And his real fear is that he has no health insurance and can't afford it. Who are we as a people? How can we possibly talk about taking away insurance from 20 million people in order to subsidize a $1 trillion tax cut for the rich? Scott, I don't want my tax cut. I want poor people to get health care. Let me get off my soapbox now and let you get back to asking questions.
Well, Doctor, I want to play devil's advocate here because I don't think the people would say that they want poor people to be sick. I think people are afraid of not having money, and they feel that this costs too much, and they've heard that this is going to bankrupt us, and we're not going to be able to put money toward finding new jobs, and maybe if we had new jobs, these poor people would not be poor because they'd have a job and they could afford health insurance. I think that's the argument.
Well, let's deal with that issue because we actually have some facts in that area. We know today that 35% of all medical costs are spent on either on tests, procedures that are either unnecessary, inappropriate, or actually contraindicated. And we know this because the Institute of Medicine, this country's most prestigious scientific body, has done a study, and they tell us 35% of all medical costs are spent on unnecessary or inappropriate activities. Well, how could you, by the way, 25% of all private insurance costs go to marketing and profits. So if you put that together, we could reduce 50% of the medical costs in this country by doing one single thing, turning it all over to a single payer system like Medicare.
Now,
because if you had a single payer system, Medicare would say to the doctor, "Hey, doc, you can do that unnecessary thing. You can do that thing to your patient that has proven to be ineffective, worthless, but we won't pay you for it." And doctors would stop doing it tomorrow.
Doctor, we hear about, that's a term Bernie Sanders used a lot. Donald Trump even used it during the campaign. We have heard about it for years. President Obama talked about it in the early stages of Obamacare. Can you describe succinctly, because I'm not sure, it seems to me when people hear the term single payer, all they hear is heavy cost. What is single payer and why would it be best?
Well, the best example of single payer in this country is Medicare. And everybody loves Medicare. The AMA loves Medicare. They're out in defense of Medicare. AARP loves Medicare. I love Medicare. My doctor loves Medicare. Why? Because it pays a fair price for medical care. And because it pays quickly and promptly, because it does give us some control. If you are over 65, you are automatically enrolled in Medicare, you are charged for Medicare, and you get the benefits of Medicare. Single payer. Now, you can supplement your Medicare if you want a luxury, a Cadillac plan. You can go pay extra and get some other things covered. But the most popular insurance program in the United States of America is Medicare. I'd like to point out, by the way, that in the 1960s, when Medicare was created by Lyndon Johnson's administration, the AMA opposed it vehemently. They attacked it as socialized medicine. They said that third parties would interfere with the doctor's care. It was all nonsense, absolute all nonsense. So what I would do is I would have a single-payer health care system. If you didn't want to belong to it, you wanted to go buy your own private insurance, be my guest. By the way, I would turn the single-payer system over to a group like Kaiser Permanente Medical Group here in Southern California, which says to its doctors, if you don't practice good medicine, we're going to throw you out. They actually monitor the percent of female patients who get mammograms. And if a doctor is missing out and not ordering them preventively and properly, they discipline the doctor. They put him or her on alert. So we could cut the costs of medical care in this country by a third if we just got rid of insurance companies. Now, imagine getting rid of insurance companies. I mean, what's the chance of that, Scott? These very same people who tell us that costs are exploding and that everything's out of control are fighting the single-payer system because they own the insurance companies.
So let's say, because you said it exactly right, the argument against single-payer, and I remember hearing it during the election, and I've heard callers call in and say that if Bernie had got in or Hillary had got in, the big fear was we could not afford what they were proposing. Okay, why would single payer not cost a lot of money?
There are several reasons. Number one, you dramatically reduce the cost of enrollment, of marketing, of sales. You eliminate the profit percentage, 15-20% of profits. You have a mechanism that ensures that inappropriate work won't be done, because the minute you stop paying for it, doctors stop doing it, right?
Right.
How many doctors are going to tell the patient, I want to order this test, it's not effective, or I want to put you on this treatment. There is no scientific proof that it works at all, and it's going to cost you $1,000 this year, and Medicare won't pay for it because it doesn't work, so you'll have to pay for it yourself. Can you imagine that conversation going on? So it gives one not the ability to set prices, but the ability to set standards of care.
And the opposition for this, because to my knowledge, even when Obamacare was trying to be passed, and the Democrats had control of the House and the Senate, this was not what they went for. Is that because of the insurance companies?
It's because of politics. It's because of compromise. It's because that bill was written by the insurance companies, by the drug companies, by the Democrats, by the Republicans, everyone with their own little piece of the pie. Obamacare has many, many defects. There's no question about that. Personally, what I would have done, if I had been president, my wife loves when I say that, I would have expanded Medicare. I would have said, okay, Medicare is really working well for everyone over 65. We're now going to lower the age to 50. And then I would have lowered it to 40, and then to 25, and then all the way down. I would have gradually expanded a system that we know does work, but nobody wanted to give up the other side of that market. Here's what Obamacare did. Obamacare put 20 million people on insurance who could not have it otherwise. And what the studies show clearly, decisively, the facts are that people who are insured in this country have a 7 to 15% people who are uninsured in this country have a 7 to 15% increased chance of dying in any given year. So when I talk about being pro-life, I say if you are truly pro-life, you would not allow someone to go uninsured, because the proof is clear. People without insurance jeopardize their lives because they cannot afford to get the care at a stage when it could make a difference. Who are we as a people that we would be willing to let poor people die because we don't want to spend the money? But we are willing to give a $1 trillion tax cut to the rich. Who are we as a people, Scott?
Well, this is interesting, because I want to start, because this is such an interesting, this is an important conversation, and this is a conversation I'm not hearing at this length anywhere, so I'm glad we're having it. I want to go back to before Obamacare, now, and where we're headed. So let's start chronologically and go back before. Now, the system, the system that I understood was in place before Obamacare, that I lived in, because I was alive, was if you needed help, you went to the emergency room. They could not refuse to treat you, Hippocratic Oath, and they would send you to a doctor if you had something serious, and the bills piled up if you did not have insurance. They would not refuse to treat you, and a lot of people just had medical debt. That system existed right up until the implication of Obamacare in 2010, I believe it was. What was wrong with that system, and why did it last for so long?
Well, what's wrong with it is that they not only had medical debt, but they had medical death. Because people who are cared for in that system can't afford to go to the doctor after the emergency room. They can't afford the follow-up. They can't afford the preventive care that might have kept them out of the emergency room. The irony of this, here's the irony. We paid for those people anyway. You don't think, I'll make up the name of a hospital. We've got Cedars here in Los Angeles. Cedars takes someone in to the emergency room. They cannot turn them away. The person is seriously ill, just had a stroke from hypertension, and from neglected hypertension because they couldn't afford the doctor or the pills. And the bill is $15,000. Do you think that Cedars eats that bill? No. No, they add it on to your bill and my bill, Scott. We're paying for that anyway. All I am suggesting is that we, as a people, either because we believe that we are better than that, or because we understand the economics, we pay to, we give these people health care so that they can afford to go to the doctor, get their medications, and not have the stroke. All of the research shows clearly that the stroke is far, far more expensive for us than the preventive care.
Then we move to Obamacare. Now, as everybody said, even President Obama himself said, this needs to be worked on. What are the, we talked about one of the good things is it got people on health care. But what does need to be worked on? What is wrong with the system we have today?
Well, there are several parts that to Obamacare, and I think it's important not to think of Obamacare as one single thing. For example, the majority of newly insured people on Obamacare were added to the rolls because the federal government said to the states, we will pay for Medicaid insurance for the poor. All right? And the great majority of the 20, 22 million newly insured are in those states that said, hey, give us the money. We'd be happy to give it to the poor. The governor of Utah, and that state was offered $100 million to care for the poor, rejected that money on principle. What was his principle? He said, the federal government is not giving us the money we need to administer the $100 million. And it'll cost us at least 5% to administer the $100 million. So we're turning it down. Now, ironically, the economists pointed out that the state lost $20 million in tax revenues that it would have gained had the $100 million been pumped into the economy. So you tell me, who is standing on principle, President Obama or Governor Herbert?
Why do doctors, and I'm not saying all, because obviously we have one right here who doesn't oppose it, but I knew doctors when Obamacare was coming in, and now that it is in, who don't like it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in that situation, if the $100 million comes to Utah in basically health insurance money, money to pay for tests and things that people need who are not wealthy, okay, they get that money. They go to the doctor when they were not going before, and more people are going to the doctor, more tests are run, and the doctor makes more profit. Why do doctors oppose it?
Well, actually, doctors do not oppose it. I just need to point out that the American Medical Association, the very same group that opposed insurance 75 years ago and that opposed Medicare in the 60s, is now supporting they're opposed to dismantling Obamacare. But here's the interesting thing about Medicaid. Medicaid does not pay as much as Medicare. The fees that are paid to doctors are significantly less than market fees, and in many states they're unreasonably low. And so many doctors say, I will not accept those fees. By the way, you don't have to accept those fees, but you simply don't accept those patients. So there are a huge number of physicians in the United States who say, I will not take a Medicaid patient because it does not pay me enough. I want you to know that with respect to this group of physicians, I do respect their right to say that's not enough money for me. But I also ask the question again, who are we as a people? There was a time when doctors took care of patients for nothing. There was a time back in the early 70s when I was a staff physician at the county hospital here in Los Angeles, working for the with the University of Southern California. And all I saw were cancer patients, and I wanted to see some healthy patients. A half day a week, I just needed to get out and be with healthy women. It was for my own mental health. And so a practicing physician in Beverly Hills, he had been in practice many, many years, offered to let me use his office and his nurse for nothing, no charge, on the following conditions. I would cover his patients at night when he was away. When he was away, I covered his gynecology patients. B, I would charge his, I would agree to charge his patients that I saw in the office when he was away the same rates he charged, which were twice what I charged, literally twice what I charged. But he couldn't have me cutting his prices. I said, fine, you want me to charge double, I'll charge double. And the third condition was that I had to take care of their housekeepers and their gardeners' wives free of charge. Absolutely no charge. Now, that's the way we used to practice medicine.
In the
old days.
Well, this might seem like an obscure...
It's a business. It's a business now.
Well, this might seem like an obscure question, but I hear this all the time. Why did doctors stop making house calls?
It's a really good question, and there's a really good answer for it, and that is that it's an incredibly inefficient way to practice medicine. It's a very, very poor use of the physician's time. It's a very expensive way because, I mean, you're taking a highly paid person with enormous expertise and forcing them to drive around for 10, 15 minutes on either side of the call. That makes no sense. On the other hand, there has been a system created now, a system of hospice that brings doctors into patients' homes for terminally ill patients. And there are a number of services available now that will bring physicians into homes for seriously ill and chronically ill patients who cannot come in. But it is a very inefficient way to deliver routine medical care.
And now to veer back onto this trajectory of healthcare in this country. Two weeks ago, a plan was laid out by Paul Ryan and part of the Republican Congress. Now, this plan, yes, it did repeal what is known as Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, but this plan kept a lot of the provisions. Let's start with the original plan, which kept pre-existing conditions, which kept...
I got to stop you.
Okay.
You used the word plan four times in getting ready for this question. There is no plan. What plan are you talking about?
The thing that was known, I didn't want to say plan, the thing that was known...
Well, thank you, because these folks have had 7 months to come up with... No, they've had years to come up with a plan. They took votes in Congress 40 or 50 times to repeal Obamacare. They've had years to come up with a plan. There is no plan, Scott.
The legislation that was put in front of the Republicans 2 weeks ago, that the first version, let's start with the first version, which said we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to keep a lot of it. We're going to keep, you can stay on your parents' insurance till you're 26. You can keep pre-existing condition. We're going to keep Medicare to a degree and then phase it out over 4 years, the extra money we've been giving. But we're going to keep a lot of it. What was wrong with that legislation from a doctor's perspective?
Well, there were two things wrong with it. Actually, there were three things wrong with it. Number one, it was all a lie. It was based on the presumption that Obamacare was a failure and was going to implode. And in fact, Obamacare has been a spectacular success. There are 20 to 22 million more people insured than were covered before. So number one, it was a lie. Number two, they said at that time that you could stay in your parents' plan and the pre-existing conditions wouldn't disqualify you. But perhaps you've noted that in the 2 or 3 or 4 weeks since then, they've talked about changing that. And the third thing is that it was positioned as a way to save the country from deficit, correct?
Yes, that was the idea.
We could not afford this. Then can you explain to me, Scott, why the same bill included a clause that would have given the rich a tax cut that would have eliminated $1 trillion in revenues over the next 10 years?
I think if we asked one of them, their answer would be that if you ease up the tax burden on the rich, that more jobs will be created and people can buy their own insurance.
Pardon me for laughing out loud. I shouldn't do that on the air, should I? How many times have we been told that in the last 50 years, and has it ever worked once?
But we keep doing it.
Yes. Yes, we do, don't we?
We do. Well, why do we?
you notice the billionaire Koch brothers tell us that they'll create more jobs? Have you seen them do it?
Well,
the billionaire Trump says it would create more jobs. Have you seen him do that?
Well, it's interesting because what is fascinating is that this plan comes about, and even that plan, as bad as you feel it was, that legislation, excuse me, that still did not satisfy the Republican, the Freedom Caucus. And Freedom Caucus is very important where I sit because our representative, who does our voting, Jim Jordan, you might have heard of him, is a member of this Freedom Caucus. And that plan, that legislation, was even too, they couldn't even get that through. So they just want to repeal it altogether. And Jim Jordan on my show, I wish I would have taken the clip out. I'll have to do that and send it to you. But he was on my show before they voted on that. And he said, and this is a paraphrase, I don't want to misquote him. I wish I said I had had the clip. But the paraphrase was, when we were having this discussion, was if you don't buy fire insurance and your house catches on fire, you can't go out and buy fire insurance while your house is on fire. That was his answer as to why people need to buy health insurance before they're sick. And I said, well, what about the people who just don't? And he said, we don't refuse health care in this country.
Well, that is such a dishonest statement. I mean, that's a lie. We refuse health care all the time. If you're critically ill and you present yourself at an emergency room, it is against the law for them to turn you away until they have seen you. And then they turn you back out into the street, sick and that is just an absolute lie. And let's talk about children. How can you not create a system that cares for children when their parents can't afford health care? Someone making $10 an hour, $400 a week, $20,000 a year, how can they afford $10,000 a year for insurance?
Well, it would be absolutely difficult. So again, when we get to this idea of health care in this country,
I want to stop again.
Okay.
I want to go back to my original question. Who are we as a people? We have education, public education for everyone, not just for the people who can afford it, not just for the people who buy education insurance. We have mandatory insurance for the elderly, people over 65. It's called Medicare. It works incredibly well. Who are we as a people? By the way, if your house burns down, I do not have to pay any of the related costs if I am your next door neighbor. But if you neglect your health because you can't afford it, because you cannot afford it, and you have a stroke, I end up paying for your stroke because the hospital cannot turn you away, and so they add your costs to my bill. So your congressman is not telling the truth. It's a good story, but it's only half the story.
If you talk to anybody who does not like Obamacare and you say, what's the problem? The first thing they will say is premiums are going through the roof. True or false, and what do we do about it?
False. They are not going through the roof. Actually, the increase since Obamacare was passed, the facts are that the rate of increase of premiums has actually slowed down. Notice I did not say that premiums are not increasing, but the rate of increase has actually slowed. That is the fact. If you really don't want to deal with the extraordinary costs of medicine, the only effective solution is single-payer insurance. I would vote for it tomorrow. I would offer Medicare to everyone in the United States, and I would tax everyone, and no one could ever be excluded because they had cancer already.
If you took all, we just had a presidential election. If you took every candidate that was in the primary for both sides, the closest person to what you're saying would have been Bernie Sanders, followed by Hillary Clinton, followed by, I do think, Donald Trump, and then followed by the other Republicans kind of staggered. That being said, why did the country, when we do have a right to vote, why did we not choose a person who wanted something closer to that, which would have been Hillary Clinton?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I don't think it had anything to do with facts. I don't think it had. I think there were, by the way, I personally believe that there were several Republican candidates who would have come up with solutions that represented both compassionate and clever, efficient, effective mechanisms. There were some very smart people up there on the stage on the Republican side. And I had great trouble with Bernie Sanders. My father would have loved him. My father was a socialist, and oh boy, he would have knocked on doors for Bernie Sanders. But I thought that Sanders was, I felt he was dishonest by promising what he knew could not be delivered. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat and would much, much have preferred someone like John Huntsman or Kasich or several of the Republicans over Bernie Sanders. I thought Hillary Clinton probably could have done a good job.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned our governor is Kasich. Now, it's interesting here in Ohio that, as I say, our representative, Jim Jordan, we know what his answer is. He doesn't want that. He wants to repeal it fully, then come up with something where we give people money to buy their health care insurance, give them a tax break. The moderates in Congress, Republican, wanted more of what the Paul Ryan plan was. Now, our governor didn't like either one of those plans, who is a Republican, but he also doesn't like Obamacare. So how does a guy like Kasich, our governor, not like any of the plans, but also I don't believe he's for single payer? What are they, I mean, what is there any other form of health care here that is going to work and not cause a heavy bankruptcy to the taxpayers? A heavy burden, maybe I should say, is a better term.
Well, I think let me predict the future. 20 years from now, 25 years from now, we are going to have a single-payer system. It is going to look just like Medicare. It's going to be more scientifically run. It's going to be, the decisions and regulations are going to be based on science. If the science shows that a procedure doesn't work, then Medicare will not pay for it. And the doctor will have to tell you why you're stuck with the bill. But I am confident at the 90-95% level that we will have a single-payer system, because it is the only way to save the country economically and fulfill our promise as a people. And that promise is that we will allow no child, no man, no woman to go without proper medical care. Now, you will never be able to prove me wrong, because I'm 80 years old and I ain't going to make it to 105.
Well, you know, that's my next question, because if people had single payer, if everybody had single payer before they got to age 65, which is, you know, the way it is now, if everybody had single payer before then, does the life expectancy go up greatly because people are seeing doctors regularly? Do people live to 105?
No question. No question in my mind. Not only would the life expectancy go up, but the quality of life would go up. There is absolutely no question. And by the way, this is not my opinion. There's very powerful science on this. If you look at all of the studies that have been done, people who have insurance are much more likely to go in for preventive care and much less likely to suffer some of the catastrophic preventable illnesses. I'm talking about stroke and heart attack, things that are fantastically costly in the long run.
As we sit here in the year 2017, if you would ask most people, if you'd walk up to somebody on the sidewalk today and say, what did your mother, what did your father pass away from if they have died? I bet you the answers are going to be cancer, stroke, heart attack. Those would be the ones. Now, that being said, if we had single payer early in life and people could get their hypertension, people could get their heart disease, people could get their early detection of cancers done, what are the causes of death in this country in 20, 30, 40 years?
Well, there'd probably be natural causes. I think cancer would actually, unless some breakthrough is made, I think cancer will become the major cause of death, because the frequency increases with increasing age. And that's probably a function of environmental exposure and genetic errors that occur along the way. But when I was an intern, this is 1962, if a man died of a heart attack, the newspaper would report that he died of natural causes. There is no, and by the way, if he died at 60 of a heart attack, they would describe it as natural causes. That means someone didn't kill him. Today, we know there is nothing natural about a heart attack. I'm 80 years old, and I will be climbing Mount Kilimanjaro again in July. And I owe my ability to climb in part to the fact that my high blood cholesterol was discovered very early and is being very effectively treated with statin drugs. I owe my ability to climb in part to the fact that I have had one invasive cancer removed when it was infinitesimally small. So I owe it to my insurance. I owe it to my preventive medical care. The day will come. The day will come when people actually die of natural causes around the age of 100.
Let me ask you.
Enjoy good health up to that point, by the way.
As we wrap, let me ask you about that, because that's interesting. Natural causes, because you see that on a lot of death certificates. And a lot of things that were considered natural years ago are not now. Let's say you're 80 years old, and you are, you know, we don't know, this is just an abstract person, but let's say you're 80 years old, you're fine 1 minute, you're not diagnosed with anything, and 20 minutes later, you're gone. And the coroner comes in and says, you died of natural causes. What did you die from, most likely?
I don't know. It is a good question, but most likely, I ain't going to die.
Ever.
I am far less likely to die suddenly. No, today. It is so interesting because there was a fellow in front of me on the plane last night, 400 pounds. Now, he's probably 50 years old. If he died suddenly, it'd be likely to be a heart attack. I'm not likely to go that quickly. At 90, 95, I'll start slowing down. And if I die in my sleep, that's a natural cause.
But what, when you go, what is, what, do we just never know? Does the coroner just, do they rule out things?
We don't know. I don't think we understand that very, very end of life when it just kind of quits. I suspect, and this is a guess just based on reading I do for interest, that, you know, stuff just sort of wears out. The tiny little machinery, the mitochondria in the cells, just kind of wear out. It appears that there is some natural limit to our lifespan, somewhere around 110, 120. We're coming to the point in this country where we're going to have more than 1 million people over 100 years of age. Those people, by the way, are likely to be healthier in their 100th year than the guy in front of me was on the airplane in his 50th or 60th year.
It's an amazing conversation. I'm so glad you came on to have it. And don't think, Dr. Euline, that I'm going to wait 5 months before we talk again, because I think these things are very, very important, and you describe them so well, and it's always fascinating. Dr. Art Euline, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you, Scott.
Bye-bye.
As always.
And that's all the time we have today, folks. Hopefully that was enlightening and educational, and you got something out of it. On this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned for much more programming here on WWGH Radio.
Broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Mary Ann Michaels.
Alexander Hamilton is going off the $10 bill in 5 years. So long, Alexander. And he is going to on 2020 on the dollar bill. And this summer, they...